The best way to predict the future is to invent it. Stephen Ambrose brings you up to speed on what the future holds as he explores the latest technology as it impacts our lives.
Good morning and welcome to Tech Talk right here on FireFM, where we always dive into the world of technology and, you know, we try to keep you informed without getting you lost in jargon. And we've got a pretty exciting lineup today. There's been a good week. It's been a very exciting week with the launch of the new Grok 4 AI, with the launch of the Samsung Fold and Flip Phone 7s. A lot of stuff has been happening over the last little while. There's been a lot of changes, a lot of movement, and a lot of excitement in the tech world as things develop. But realize that the Northern Hemisphere is moving into summertime. July, August are the deep summer months where everyone's out and about and the weather theoretically is not so terrible. So expect announcements and all the rest to slow down over the next 6 weeks. But thereafter, moving into the end of the year, expect to see some spectacular launches of new products. Of course, Apple in September, as usual, with their new iPhone, but been playing with their new OS 26 over the last few weeks. The beta's been out a few weeks. And pretty impressive, some really smart moves forward in their AI journey. And a lot of changes in those spaces coming. But normally, by September, October, all the big trade shows, all the big announcements in tech are made, getting ready for the big Christmas spending boom that comes normally with regard to technology at the end of the year. And on that note, let's just talk about some big stories that are happening right here in South Africa. And Telkom made quite a big announcement regarding high-speed internet expansion. Now, Telkom has the largest fiber optic network in the country by a huge margin. Look, they've had regulatory independence for ages, but they've had a massive headway. And simply put, they are deploying 5G enabled. Now, this is an interesting one, fiber optic infrastructure to connect about 50,000 more households and 1,200 more schools in the so-called unserved areas by mid-2026. That's a big capital outlay. And why are they calling them 5G enabled? What they're talking about is 5G last mile and fiber optic to a central point in a so-called underserviced area. And mostly these areas are deep rural or somehow disconnected. Now, what is interesting that in that space is also coming solutions such as the Elon Musk and satellite stuff, which will definitely play in those sort of areas. But still, this is a very important step because fiber is generally more solid, more regular, more stable than anything else. And it's going to be said to deliver massive speeds up to a gigabyte per second, which is far higher than any satellite technology. And also with massively low latency, that's the time between you connecting to a server and back of under 20 milliseconds. So for e-medicine or telemedicine, learning and speech, it's definitely going to be probably the preferred solution in this whole space. Also mentioned was that pricing models are going to be specifically designed to ensure affordability. Now, that's another sort of contentious area, because if they're going to make it cheaper for certain areas, then are they going to put up the prices in other areas to compensate? This will remain to be seen, because at the end of the day, Telkom is a commercial venture. It has to make a bit of profit somewhere along the line. And if they're giving subsidized pricing to some, I think they're going to have to figure out how to get the others to pay for it. But that is a story for a completely different program and for a different day. But good news, because I think, you know, without fast, stable internet, the modern world is hard to navigate. So let's watch the space. And I think things are going to get a lot more interesting across the country. The next most interesting thing that popped up is that a small company in South Africa called IntelliTech Solutions is releasing an AI-powered inventory management app. Now, AI powers everything. It's become a de facto, day sort of standard in anything that we do. And it's called StockSmart, and it might interest a lot of small businesses. They use something called TensorFlow-based machine learning, fancy words, high tech, to analyze sales data. A lot of that's available on, for example, AWS, and predict demand with 85% accuracy. Now, as Amazon have proved over the years, their ability to know what people are going to buy ahead of time has done two things. One, it's reduced the cost of stock on hand, which everybody wants. And two, reduced the amount of time to get that stock to a customer because it's available in the area that that customer would potentially have it. So these are really, really important parts of any business. If you can reduce your stock, you reduce cost. If you can improve your delivery to customers, customer satisfaction is everything, and hopefully they'll buy more. So again, using all sorts of technical stuff, it's all cloud-based point of system, things like Square or any other interesting cloud-based point of sale solution. And they use it, it's built on a very interesting low-code platform I've been watching for a while. It's called Flutter. And it's really accessible for non-technical users. From the brief look I've had, it's easy to use, it's simple, and it certainly seems to offer some interesting takes on how AI is simply helping businesses be more efficient, cut costs. And in the latest environment where we're talking about export tariffs to the US shooting up, sorry to pop in some sort of political commentary, but not good for anyone in South Africa. It'll overall reduce our GDP. I hope not, but it will by a few percentage points. And that affects everybody. So it's not just the big manufacturers, exporters who are going to suffer. Ultimately, those people spend money domestically, support small business, support all sorts of other things. And if they're taking strain, we'll end up taking strain. But again, a topic to be thought about in another forum completely. And on two fronts, solar has become a major player in the space. There are two real headwinds that are hitting solar. The first one is Eskom have actually got their act together. They've brought on the last of Medupi's generators. Everything's up and running. So the chances of load shedding over the next little while, certainly into winter, is way reduced. Not to say that can't happen, but it should happen far less. The need to be independent of grid power is reduced, which generally affects, you know, the sales of solar. But having solar over the long term, considering the costs, makes so much sense. So a company called SunPower Innovations has unveiled a 50 megawatt solar project featuring all sorts of brand new photovoltaic cells, where the efficiencies are now over 20%, up to 23% in fact. And these modules with, again, AI-optimized tracking systems to move the things to get maximum energy could theoretically power up to 12,000 homes annually and reduce all sorts of CO2 emissions, which is great. It also incorporates Huawei's smart inverters, because Huawei have somehow fallen out of favor on the mobile side, but their home and their power products are coming into the country at really good prices, very good technology, and are really making a lot of sense. So check that out. Have a look for SunPower Innovations online if you're interested in all this stuff. And you'll be very impressed with what they're doing and where they're going and the types of stuff that's happening. On the other side, unfortunately, NERSA and Eskom are hitting back at those. There's going to be a gun fight over this, I have no doubt. But they're hitting back at people with solar power installations, saying that everybody's got to pay a 500 Rand more grid-connected fee. And if you've got a solar system, you're going to be penalized heavily for not using Eskom power, which sounds like some sort of bizarre, crazy notion. But then again, South Africa's quite the king at coming up with bizarre, crazy notions that make zero sense in any normal context. But these are proposals that have been put forward, apart from the cost of electricity going up and up, which definitely heads in the direction of an efficient solar setup at your home or business. But if they start penalizing you and making you pay more simply because you are connected to the grid, it has two things that can happen. One, people will fully disconnect from the grid, then too bad, so sad, we're not connecting, and we're definitely not taking power from Eskom. And the facts are showing that more and more are doing it, because the total amount of sales by Eskom over the years has been dropping steadily, and the rate of those sales has been increasing. Now, you could blame a bit of that on load shedding, but a good chunk of that definitely relates to people going fully off-grid or partially off-grid by using solar to augment or top up or replace for the most part, your grid power during the day. So again, batteries prices have dropped globally. They certainly dropped by about 30%, and we're going to see more and more storage systems make a lot of sense in South Africa and globally, coupled with the fact that once you've paid for your solar thing, maintenance shouldn't be a huge problem. So you've got 10, 15, 20 years worth of free, in inverted commas, power. So I think Eskom have got to be very careful. The age of the big central monopoly of having these massive baseload power stations burning coal or burning oil or burning something is definitely coming to an end. And personal power generation, if they get solar power panels up to 30, 40, 50% efficiency, they will be ridiculously cheap. So watch the space. I think it's going to shape our lives in very, very interesting ways. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and I'll be back straight after this.
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
Now, moving into Tech Talk, which is all about the rise. Let's put it this way. I think the rise has happened. It's risen, the rise of artificial intelligence. And this week, a big announcement of Grok 4. Now, Grok 4 has been a little bit, I wouldn't say hidden. It for most people who use Twitter or X, as it's now called, it sort of just popped up in your app. It popped up online and has been slowly but surely becoming more and more relevant within the AI space. Now, there are a lot of models out there, but ChatGPT, OpenAI's ChatGPT, certainly dominated. It was the first. It was big news. It's created enormous hype, and everybody's ChatGPTing absolutely everything. Google were a little late out of the starting blocks, but they now have a fully competitive product in Google's Gemini. It's now got to the point where if you just update your browser, you land up with Gemini giving you the first search thing in any context. So if I may make a suggestion, if you haven't updated your Google Chrome browser, do so with immediate effect. Go for it. Really just check it out. It's a bit hidden. It should auto-update, but generally if it doesn't, go to help. You know, there are three dots, vertical dots on the far right-hand side of your browser. Go to help, click on it, and click on About Google Chrome. If you click on About Google Chrome, it will then check for a Google Chrome update. And guess what? I have one. Can you believe it? I haven't got the latest version of Google Chrome on my machine. But anyway, do that, and you will see the latest version of Gemini. And that is deeply now built into search. Google have always been using AI or some form of algorithmic improvement with regard to search. In the beginning, search was simply words, keywords. Put in a keyword, it would give you every single article with that keyword. It became quite a trick to figure out which keywords worked, which keywords didn't, and how to optimize your websites or your content online for keyword search. Well, that was so sort of 2020, if you want to go there. But even way before that, keywords became pretty irrelevant because we were talking about key phrases, and they were using more and more advanced computing and algorithmic power to create far better search results, far more context sensitive, location-based sensitive. All these things were happening. Before you did a search, you'd get your keyword from anywhere in the world. Then they moved it to a local place where you are, and also within the context of what you had done in the past, your search history. So all of that information has been stored by Google over the years, and certainly has helped to build its Gemini AI, and moving forward will probably continue to expand across absolutely everything Google does, although it's pretty much integrated with everything that Google offers right at this point. And then you've got Anthropic's Claude. Claude is also a huge, huge AI, doing a lot of stuff within the corporate space and other space, but you'll see it pop up everywhere. And again, super competitive. There's a whole host of some of the new Chinese models that have come along at very low cost, very high performance and everything.
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
Well, I'm back, unfortunately. That wasn't a technical hitch. That was me. I told everyone to update their Chrome browser. I did the same. And what it did, it simply cut me off because I'm using Google and Google Chrome to talk to you from my desk right here at home. So the wonders of technical stuff. So I cut myself off using advice I was giving all of you. Hopefully you are still listening and hopefully through Chrome, that you don't cut me off. So we'll move back to where we were going. So I was just talking about Google and Anthropic's Claude and all the other models that are out there. And essentially, there's so many different types of algorithms and machine learning patterns that have been coming to the fore. And it's just a technology that you'll find behind Apple Siri, behind Waze, finding the fastest route. And all of these AIs rely on what they call neural networks, basically digital brains. And the big and the key thing about these things, like humans, the more you research, the more you know, the more time you spend on a topic, the more expert you become. But computers don't sleep, they don't eat, they don't rest, they just work tirelessly. And data centers around the world are getting bigger and bigger and more optimized. Storage is getting bigger and better and faster. So the amount of, and the other thing a computer doesn't do, it never forgets anything. So once it's out there, once it's stored, once it's read, once it's analyzed, and once it's reported on, that information builds, like humans do, into more information that can be used by the various platforms to bring you even better and better and better models. And the truth is that the exponential growth of AI has mathematically been proven. The faster, the longer that it goes on, the faster it learns, the more it learns, the faster it learns. It's exponential. So expect the announcements to keep coming out at an incredible rate. And currently, all AI is mimicking human brain processing. But it does allow machines to recognize patterns, detect objects, and even understand scenes, scenarios, context, and all sorts of things that really was the province of human brains completely. They all have multi-layered types of architectures, like something, I love this word, convolutional neural networks are great for pictures because they're multi-layered. What they do is they keep referencing and doing all sort of nuanced work on multi layers. To basically analyze something visual and create something visual, which is pretty insane. The sort of standard processes, which are much more just looking and reading facts and things, are really important. But there is just no question that the power of these various platforms is improving day by day. They power self-driving cars to checking out enhanced medical imaging. And the real power of CNNs, these convolutional neural networks, is they keep creating new possibilities in our world. The image recognition, like in Google Photos, while natural language processing, which is the other form of neural net of sort of algorithms, drives chatbots and all sorts of other creative stuff. But the big news this week was the launch of XAI. That's the name of the AI company associated with X and our dear friend, Mr. Musk. They launched Grok 4 on the 10th of July. And this was quite a big launch. I watched the live stream on X, and it is, they say, I mean, I have no way to know for a fact, but let's be reasonable. They claim this is the world's most powerful AI model. And when you look at the numbers, it's mind-boggling. It was trained on a colossal data set. And remember, that includes everything on the web, including XAI's X platform, using 200,000 GPUs. Right? They're what they call the Colossus data center. I can imagine the size of this data center. Interestingly, this is a data center that NVIDIA said was built in less time and at more scale and speed than they'd ever seen any company ever do in the history of creating data centers. And NVIDIA has been involved in data center growth over the years at every level. So this new AI, here's some specs again, doesn't have to mean anything, but it's certainly, when you look at them in relation to everything else that's available right now, this AI scores 95% score on the AIME benchmark for mathematical reasoning. Now, you can check that out, just Google AIME benchmark. But anyway, it surpasses OpenAI's ChatGPT 4.0, which is their latest model, which is sitting at 92%, and DeepSeek's version 3, sitting at 93%. What it also does, it excels in coding with a 72 to 75% score on SWE Bench, which is a benchmark for coding, for real-world software tasks. We've discussed this before, and there's no question these AIs are killing entry-level or basic-level programming, whereas ChatGPT's 4.0 only gets a 69%. So 72 to 75 is significantly better than 69%, because if a program's 1% wrong, it's going to have errors. Grok 4's architecture also includes advanced transformer models and all sorts of reinforced learning, which is multi-layered stuff that keeps sort of learning and learning from learning, which is super smart. And what it does, it enables it to think through complex problems step by step. And it also reduces the errors in all AIs, which is known as hallucinations. All AIs can logically come up with information that is completely incorrect, but it's so well constructed that it can fool you, hence hallucinations. There are two new variants that have been introduced. Grok 4 Code, which is designed for developers, so it's highly optimized for code. And I'm not sure if the benchmarks looked at Grok 4 General or Grok 4 Code for developers, but if General is 72 to 75, Grok 4 Code might even be better. And that offers code completion, debugging, and architectural recommendations directly into tools like Cursor AI and other coding programs. And that is a huge, huge, huge benefit. And then the other variant is simply a super massive powered variant, but those cost $300 a month. So all of them cost money if you want the latest versions. Who knows how long it'll take? And it won't, I can tell you, it won't take long before Grok 4 becomes the standard. Grok 3 is now the standard, but Grok 4, they'll try, give it a month or so or two, of trying to get people to pay for it, either $30 or $300, the two versions that you want. They've also made sure that all learning is now deep learning. There's no more just the standard mode. It's all deep learning in Grok 4. So it's all reasoning, it's all agentic, it's all next level coding. And that's probably why some of the results are so much better. Again, take this with a pinch of salt, because the other, you know, ChatGPT and the rest also have these advanced modes, which when enabled, offer you much more processing power, far higher accuracy, and much higher speed. So, you know, listen, OpenAI are busy promoting everything, but still, I must say, the speed at which they've grown, the speed at which they've come up in terms of being a really smart AI is breathtaking. So, the one thing that really works for Grok 4 is that it has real-time data access to X, which is a massive platform where billions, literally, of people are interacting, posting information. Look, for me, the vast majority of information and the algorithmic narrowing of that information to what you've looked at and your personal preferences, et cetera, et cetera. It's a full-time job to manage a X feed, because otherwise you get the most arbitrary. For this last couple of weeks, I've been getting a huge amount of news out of India. I have no interest in what's going on in India, none whatsoever. Some of it was interesting, but it's certainly not relevant to anything I do, anything I know. And it's taken me an age to try tell the algorithm, listen, this is not relevant. I don't want to see this stuff. Then I landed up with stuff from Canada. I'd love to know what I did to get this to happen. But these are the dangers of any sort of live social media platform trying to figure out what it is that you need to know. So be very careful with that. But the benefit of something like Grok is that they are using it to get smarter and smarter in terms of what you look at, who you talk to, what else goes on the web with you. So be very aware that all your interactions online are being analyzed, maybe not specifically, but certainly generally with regard to your personal preferences and everything that you don't, you know, that you do. So the think mode now is the standard mode. It really does enable rapid reasoning across everything, while the $300 big brain mode really adds power to very complex tasks probably not something that you need to worry about, with latencies as low as 67 milliseconds, which is pretty spectacular. I have seen in Grok 3 can sometimes take up to 90 seconds if you use DeepThink to come up, or even more minutes to come up with a really well worked out scenario based on learning and moving from different agents, et cetera, et cetera. So if they can do that in 67 milliseconds, pretty insane. So X Premium Plus will be the $40 a month. I thought it was 30. It's actually $40 a month with a super Grok plan at, that's where the $30 came in. But certainly they're going to restrict access compared to on their free tier. We'll probably sit with the Grok 3 for another couple of months, but it will move. So really, what does this mean for you and me? AI is what, like fax machines. They've just become, those of you who even remember a fax machine, they just become a daily part of life. Everybody uses it, doesn't even think about it. It becomes a verb. Just fax it to me. Well, just ChatGPT it, or just AI it, or just Grok it, or why would you even think of doing anything else? I mean, why would you search 30 websites to try to figure out what's going on? Let Grok do it. I want to know X, Y, Z. Go off and do your thing and come back with a summary of the best of everything. Pretty, pretty addictive and pretty, pretty easy to do. It really does take so much time, so much decision fatigue, and it also reduces the amount of, I would say, smart searching that you need to do to get to an answer that makes a lot of sense. So simply as you would talk to a friend, this is the trick in dealing with AIs. It's no longer a search mode. So in other words, you type in best XYZ for the best price in Johannesburg. That's a very specific, very word-based, very search-based thing. The way to approach something like any of these AIs is to chat to your friend. You know, our washing machine is failing. I'm looking for a great new washing machine. I live in Johannesburg. I want something that's energy efficient, low, no noise, because I've got a small apartment. That type of conversational chat you'd have with a friend. I want it delivered. I want it at the best price. I want something that is very well reviewed and will give me years and years of service. You put that, I know it takes longer to type in than cheapest washing machine in Joburg, but it definitely will bring you far more results that make a lot more sense. You can even add things. Please add links of where I can buy them, or are they available online, and what are the delivery costs? All of this can be thrown into one simple query or one simple phrase, and the AI will go off and come back with a well-researched, well-put-together solution to your problem, rather than a simple list that you've got to trawl through again and again. So using AI as part of our life has absolutely become part of everything. And we're going to see more and more of it as we go ahead. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break before I come back with my gadget of the week, which was also launched this week, the Samsung Flip and Fold 7. We'll be back straight after this.
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
Now, moving on, talking about extraordinary, the foldable, flippable, expandable phone format was pioneered by Samsung with their Galaxy Folds and Zs a while back, what I think 5 or 6 years back. It's crazy how quickly the time flies. And have now been emulated by many other manufacturers across the world. Some of them, like the Honor versions, super slim, super smart, super easy to use. Huawei have done the same. Unfortunately, no Google. Bit of a problem outside of China. But anyway, the fold and flexible screened devices have definitely grown amazingly over the last little while. And Samsung, for me, has been the most consistent, the most solid, and certainly the most innovative of their various types. Now, foldable screens have problems. I've got a Fold 3, which I bought many, many years ago, and the screen is finished. It's separated. It's really not done well. Not great, but such things happen. But over the time, from the 4, 5, 6, now the 7 upwards, the quality of these phones has come along in leaps and bounds. So the new Galaxy Z Fold 7 is the thinnest fold that they've ever made, and it's thin by a large margin. Totally total size is 8.9 millimeters folded, which is pretty much the same as a standard normal phone without the ability to fold. And it's only 215 grams, which is in your hand. The older one felt a little hefty, the 6 and the 5, which were fairly similar. But the 7, from what I've seen, feels way lighter, so really light. They've also upped the inside. Before, the folds slightly lagged the technical prowess of the great Galaxy, you know, the main Galaxy phones. So now they've really pushed the envelope. It's got the latest Qualcomm Snapdragon 8 Elite processor, specific for this, with a 3.4 gigahertz peak clock speed, lovely. 112 gig of RAM, which is a lot. An 8-inch dynamic AMOLED 2x main display hits a brightness of 2,600 nits. Now, that is insane. That is so bright that in direct sunlight, you can see the screen clearly, which makes a big, big, big difference. And also has a very high refresh rate. So the refresh rate of 120 hertz moves that as you scroll or as you move between screens, it's happening so fast that it feels battery smooth. It doesn't sort of jiggle a little or feel in any way unsmooth. It's really, once you've got used to it, it's absolutely amazing. It's great for multitasking, great for gaming. It really works extremely well. And what they've also done for the first time in a while is improve the cameras massively. The main camera is 200 megapixel. And normally a 200 megapixel camera would create files that are absolutely mad. But they use something called pixel binning, which means that the computer uses all those 200 pixels to pick the best pixels and put it together in a picture that's of a very high resolution, but very low, or the lowest possible of size, and gives you the best possible picture you can even imagine. They've also got a 50 megapixel ultra wide and a 12 megapixel telephoto lens on the back. And they use Samsung's AI or computer generated photo enhancing program called Generative Edit. So in truth, all mobile phones have one major problem. SLRs and big cameras have space and size. So the sensors can be much bigger. The lenses can be much bigger, and you can get much more light in. You can do far less processing. And in fact, some of them do no processing. You take direct raw images like they did in the good old days of film. But in a 4 millimeter or 5 millimeter slim phone, you cannot have any of those advantages. So what has happened is all the manufacturers, all the players have used computational methodologies to improve the picture in such a way that it compensates almost entirely for some of these massive professional cameras. Now, I don't believe that in the final degree, a top photographer with top equipment can definitely take a better picture than you and your Galaxy or your iPhone. But for everyday day-to-day pics that you and I take when we quickly pop a photo here and there, these new computational methodologies are absolutely insane. And the latest ones on Samsung's phones really do work extremely well. You can do object removal, and it's crazy. Take a picture of someone, beautiful picture, beautiful sunset, with a full rubbish bin next to them. Just circle around the rubbish bin. The computer takes it away in no uncertain terms and completely cleans up the image like it never existed. It's freaky. It's amazing. Something that you need the Photoshop to do over the years, but it's brilliant. So try it. It's one of the best ones that I've tried. Certainly, it's part of the whole AI suite that they run on there. And it certainly works better than the current released version of the Apple version. It's just freaky how it does this. So there is just so much going on with this device that I don't have enough time. Moving on to the Flip 7, which is their small flip phone, which is something also quite cool. Not entirely convinced, but for me, it's not a great idea. The Fold is far better. 8-inch front, a massive front screen, nearly 6 inches, or an 8-inch, 2 8-inch middle screens, which, you know, 2 4-inch middle screens that become an 8-inch screen, great for all sorts of things. But the Flip 7 is really clever. They've increased the size of the flex window. It's 4.1 inch. That's their cover screen, which is really high resolution and high speed. So you can see so much more without even unflipping it. And when you unflip it, it comes It is just a massive screen. So it's also dropped in weight. It's 188 grams and certainly very thin, 13.7 millimeters folded. It's super portable. It's super small. It pops into your top pocket, no problem. Not quite the same level of cameras, but it's got a 50 megapixel main camera, 12 megapixel ultra wide, and a massive battery with fast charging, which makes a real difference. Of course, all the AI features are included with real-time translation, call summarization, and the flex mode is smart. You can turn the phone into a tripod for hands-free video calls. And they also announced a budget-friendly Z Flip 7 FE, which is basically a reworked Flip 6 with a smaller 3.9-inch flex window and a slightly slower processor at a slightly lower price. That we'll see when it comes. But to summarize the whole thing, can I recommend a Z Fold and a Z Flip? The Z Flip is essentially a standard phone that folds up, puts in your pocket, and has got a very functional screen without opening it up. But if you want to do anything particular, do your banking, scroll the web, some social media, open the phone, and it's a standard candy bar sized phone. The little crease in the screen is even decreased more. You can hardly see it if you look dead on. If you look slightly to the side, you can see that it does fold. The new hinge is spectacular. It's hidden. It's 100% folding when it closes, and it has a solid, clean feel, which is just something you have to feel to behold. It's amazing. So both of them are out. They're ready for pre-order right now. The pricing is pretty high. But they come in all sorts of cool colors, blue and jet black and coral red. They are definitely some of the coolest phones that Samsung have launched. Check it out over the next little while. And we will be back with straight after this. Unfortunately, our sponsors have a quick shout out now, and we'll be back straight after this with a quick wrap up of some tech tips, you know, for us every single day, and a quick summary of what's going on in the Galaxy Z Fold and Flip world. We'll be back straight after this.
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
So to wrap it up around the whole story of the Samsung Galaxy Fold, this time they focused very much on the hardware, on how cool it is, how thin it is, how well-built it is. It's very square, it's very clean, it's very solid, it has an absolute premium feel, the colors are subtle and engaging, the screens are bright, clear, the latest UI, you know, using the latest version of Android 16 and their own One UI 8, which the UI 7 already took it so much further than before, and the One UI 8 really does build on that. All the apps, still a bit of confusion with the Samsung App Store and the Google Play Store, but still, all the apps you want, like, and love are there. It's fast, it's seamless, it's just an absolute pleasure to use. And if you need a big screen phone that folds up into a very functional, normal phone, then the Fold 7 is absolutely for you. If you want something cool and very portable for your bag or for your pocket, the Flip 7 is a great device, not quite as fast, camera not quite as good, but certainly right up there, the pictures that I took briefly are excellent, and we'll hear more and more about that going forward. But another big launch by Samsung certainly solidifies their sort of status as a top manufacturer of phones. The ecosystem is excellent, the service is great, and the product is extremely well built. The pricing is high, but at this range, sort of cutting-edge technology always is. So if in the market, check them out. An upgrade from the 6, definitely. But should you upgrade, wait for the 8, who knows? But it's a personal preference to you. But these are great devices, beautifully presented, beautifully built, great thought with the software, the whole Gemini integration and smart AI integration is very, very, very good. You don't even notice it's working, and yet it does crazy stuff like real-time translation and amazing picture manipulation. So generally, superb tech, superbly designed, well presented by a top company like Samsung. Not a lot not to like. So moving on to our last few thoughts of the day. As part of this, you should, and these are just everyday life tips, something that we've been talking about again and again. You should use your AI assistant on your phone. I've mentioned a couple of things. The other thing you've got to do, and I've been told it's wrap-up time, but I just want to mention one or two little things. You have to protect your online privacy. AI is handling more and more personal data. More and more is being stored everywhere. You should have two-factor authentication on all your apps like Gmail and WhatsApp. And you should use a password manager. I won't mention just Google Password Manager. There are a ton out there. It's now being built into OS 26 as well in iOS, and Android has a similar thing. So use it. Be very aware that your information is out there. It's being retrieved more and more, and South Africa is a massive target. So on that note, sorry, a cautionary note, be safe, have fun, enjoy all the new gizmos, gadgets, and tech out there, and trust your AI to make your life simpler, faster, and smarter. And on that note, this is Stephen Ambrose for Tech Talk right here on Chai FM.